Kia ora koutou, good morning, welcome. So this morning, we're not really going to look at any of the Bible readings, just to be a bit different. But one of our readings did have a bit that was left out. And I know Shirley and I always talk about when there's a bit that's left out, what was it? So in our Acts reading this morning, we had a bit that was left out, and it's where Judas buys a field and he dies in it. And that made me think of another reading from the Old Testament, which I'm just going to find, about a vineyard. Should have put a bookmark in here, that would have been a good idea. So, here we go, from 1 Kings, chapter 21. The following events occurred sometime afterward. Naboth the Jezreelite owned a vineyard in Jezreel, adjoining the palace of King Ahab of Samaria. Ahab said to Naboth, "Give me your vineyard, so that I may have it as a vegetable garden, since it is right next to my palace. I will give you a better vineyard in exchange. Or, if you prefer, I will pay you the price in money." But Naboth replied, "The Lord forbid that I should give up to you what I have inherited from my fathers." Ahab went home, dispirited and sullen because of the answer that Naboth the Jezreelite had given him. "I will not give up to you what I have inherited from my fathers." He lay down on his bed and turned away his face, and he would not eat. His wife Jezebel came to him and asked him, "Why are you so dispirited that you won't eat?" So he told her, "I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and proposed to him, 'Sell me your vineyard for money, or if you prefer, I'll give you another vineyard in exchange.' But he answered, 'I will not give my vineyard to you.' His wife Jezebel said to him, 'Now is the time to show yourself king over Israel. Rise and eat something and be cheerful. I will get the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite for you.' So she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who lived in the same town with Naboth. In the letters she wrote as follows: 'Proclaim a fast and seat Naboth at the front of the assembly and seat two scoundrels opposite him and let them testify against him. You have reviled God and king. Then take him out and stone him to death.' His townsmen, the elders and nobles who lived in his town, did as Jezebel had instructed them, just as was written in the letters she had sent them. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth at the front of the assembly. Then the two scoundrels came and sat down opposite him, and the scoundrels testified against Naboth publicly as follows: 'Naboth has reviled God and king.' Then they took him outside the town and stoned him to death. Word was sent to Jezebel, 'Naboth has been stoned to death.' As soon as Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned to death, she said to Ahab, 'Go and take possession of the vineyard which Naboth the Jezreelite refused to sell you for money, for Naboth is no longer alive. He is dead.' When Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, Ahab set out for the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite to take possession of it." I have some questions for us this morning. When did you or your ancestors arrive here in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
1841.
1878. 1885. Yeah. 1873. Oh, that's great. You all know these things. That's really cool. 1859. So some of my ancestors arrived in 1859, and some of them arrived in the 1960s, so a bit more recently. Some people's ancestors arrived a bit more recently. 2019. There we go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. And when were your grandparents born? Do you know that?
1880 and 1881.
Yeah.
1885.
1888 and 1891, about that decade. Yeah. Some of my grandparents were born before 1900, which I find pretty amazing, really. What about your great grandparents? A while ago. Yep. And I'm wondering, how do we feel at home? How do we feel we belong somewhere? You don't have to answer that one. And how do we put down roots? How do we feel somewhere is home? I know some people, when they get asked, where are you from? That's a very difficult question. Yeah. And I wanted us to think about what we have learned from our ancestors and what we have learned from them that we want to carry on in the next generations, the lessons that we want to pass on, the values that we want them to have, and what do we not want to pass on? I used to ask my students that question when I was a teacher at Whitirau Polytech, and it was always really interesting hearing what people had to say. So some of the values I have, I want to do justice, I want to love mercy, walk humbly, I want everyone to have a safe place to live. I want everyone to be connected to their heritage as much as possible. If someone's adopted, that might mean their adoptive family, it might mean the family they have genetic links to. It might be both. I heard a story recently from someone who works in my organisation about his parents who were from around the Bay of Plenty, and they were Māori, and their land had been taken away, and his father felt a sense of alienation, and he started drinking, and he couldn't be the man for his family that they would have liked him to be. Now, I've been doing a bit of thinking, and I sort of did it in various orders, so I might jump around a little bit. And our Bible is full of genealogies, stories of people's ancestry, whakapapa, which I think is really cool, partly because I like looking at the old names, but also I feel like it's a real link to Māori culture, the way of looking at your ancestors and who you're linked to. And as people who live here, it's important that we learn our history, that we do justice so we can be fair, so people can heal. And some of the missionaries who came here came from the land of my ancestors, some of your ancestors, and some of the people who helped start the church that we are now part of. We're involved in writing down and teaching the Māori language and translating the Bible. Henry Williams, you may have heard of Henry Williams. He and his son Edward Williams translated Te Tiriti o Waitangi. They had one night to do it in. That's not really long enough. And the descendants of Henry Williams, he had 11 children, so there are quite a few descendants, they still meet today to consider that legacy and what that means. And if you've heard of the Karuwha Trust, a few nods, it's Karuwha, Four Eyes, because Henry Williams had glasses and they called him Four Eyes. Yeah, we know a few things about him from some of these stories. And I mean, some of his letters are around, which is cool. And somebody who married one of Henry Williams' daughters is Octavius Hadfield, who you may have heard of. Do you know how many bishops of Wellington, Anglican bishops of Wellington, we've had?
12.
Close. According to what I found out, we've had 11. We're on bishop number 11. And, yeah, well done. I don't know how many I would have guessed. I had to look it up. Octavius Hadfield was the second one. And he travelled around, well, he was there when Henry Williams took around this sheet of Te Tiriti or Waitangi. Mm-hmm. And from what I read, Octavius Hadfield, the bishop, he didn't want to be one of the ones who was really promoting the treaty, but he witnessed it. So his signature is on here. And this is the one that came down to Kapiti and to Wellington to get signatures. It's very neat and tidy, this one. If you've been down to the He Tohu exhibition, you might have seen some of the others are not quite as tidy. So something else we know about Henry Williams is he was probably tidy and organised. Bishop Hadfield also wrote letters about what was happening in New Zealand. And it's amazing that we have these letters. And one of the letters he wrote in 1861, when some of our grandparents, great-grandparents were around, sorry, not that long ago, Octavius Hadfield said, "The real object of the war was nothing else than the acquisition of 600 acres of land, which the settlers were anxious to obtain, and which the governor thought proper to imagine were essential for the consolidation of the province. There were more than 100 owners of this land, which had been minutely subdivided during former generations. About 1/10 of the owners professed to sell, while the other 9/10 refused to take any part in the alienation of this land. The local land agent, without even taking any evidence, decided that it belonged to the 10 or 11 who offered to sell, and the governor proceeded to take possession. It will be observed..." Oh, that's a bit. And Octavius Hadfield also says, "It is sometimes doubted whether Christianity can have had any effect on the Māori, since many professing Christianity are now in arms against the government. I have laboured for 22 years among them, and I take this opportunity of saying that I never, before the war broke out, was so thoroughly convinced of the deep hold the Christian religion had taken of those under my charge as I have been since that event. I behold men deeply convinced of the injustice of the governor's attack upon W. King's tribe, amazed that people born and educated in the midst of Christianity can be guilty of such premeditated wickedness, and tempted to think that Christianity, if such be its fruits, may be a sham after all." So Hadfield was very concerned about his message and the actions of some people. However, Hadfield was also taken to court. Do you know about the Weremu Parata versus the Church of Wellington or Hadfield case, when there was land in Porirua that was given by Ngāti Toa for a school, which the church then never built, and we didn't give the land back, which was a breach of our Weremu Parata said it was an oral contract, and Hadfield was the one who was representing the church in that court case. I don't know if that was his choice or if because he was Bishop of Wellington, he was the church. And that's the famous case where the judge said the treaty was seen as a legal nullity, if you've heard that expression. And that case is still seen as relevant now. It's been brought up in, for example, discussions about foreshore and seabed, and that Act was only 20 years ago when we were all around. So I've had it explained to me by people from Ngāti Toa that that's one reason why the Mormon church is strong in Porirua, because people were so upset, so angry about what they saw the Anglican church had done there. So I'm encouraging us to think about our history, to think about this land, where we are,
so that we know our history, we know where we come from, and this is where, this is the ad, for the Te Riti sessions with Common Grace, the Karuwha Trust, that's Henry Williams' descendants, partly, have put together for us. So we've got these videos that are coming up, and I'm just going to check the dates. I think it's the 17th and the 24th of June. At Alan Malpass's house. It's an invitation for us to get together, watch these videos to learn more about who we are as the Anglican Church, where we've come from, so that we know what that means for us today here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Oh, Alan has a...
I'm sorry, I was a little late this morning. Grandchildren stuff. God works in amazing ways. This last week, some of you may have been at a U3A talk, which a guy from Zealandia talked about the Kaiwharawhara catchment. And he mentioned something about, I think it was Zealandia, having a 500-year plan. Big picture stuff. Wonderful sense of stewardship, both beyond Zealandia, in these hills, in these communities. Secondly, he said they were planting trees under some friends, Belmont Hills. I haven't been to that reserve over towards Pauroa. They argued a little bit about whether they should plant in Totara now or later, because really it's better it's got a bit of protection and then it can come up through. And he said, the local MU said, no, we must plant it now, because in seven generations our people are going to cut those down for their what? Big picture stuff. Mm-hmm. Secondly, on Wednesday, Lorraine and I went to a chat by an author, Unity Bookshop, who has written a book on the Edwin Fox. And it's on the Edwin Fox that my great-grandmother and grandfather came out in 1878. And we heard through the grapevine that this was there. And talking about where we belong, and I really believe it's about connections. Connections with each other, connections with God, connections with the land. And this book is all about this little boat who's visited the Edwin Fox in Victor.
Yep.
Right. He went in there, and the journeys it made and the place in history between 1850-something and 1914 of how it helped the globalisation of the world and various other things against, again, interrelationships. And amazing that you should talk about this today. So, pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.